You're tuned to 91.7 KAXE, 90.5 KBXE. This is What We're Reading. I'm Tammy Bobrowski. Coming up next, Fiona Barton talking about her new thriller, The Suspect. But first, we'll talk with author Raymond Strom. Northern Lights is the title of his debut novel. Music from Stone Temple Pilots, that's circa 1992, to set the mood for Raymond Strom's debut novel, Northern Lights, a coming-of-age story combined with a search for familial and sexual identity taking place in the fictional town of Holme, Minnesota in the 90s. Here's my conversation with Raymond Strom. Northern Lights is a coming-of-age story focusing on a young man very alone in the world. Tell us about your main character, Shane Stevenson.
Okay, well, Shane Stevenson has recently lost his father, and he's also recently graduated from high school. And in the summer before he's going to start college, he decides to go look for his mother, who had left his family a number of years earlier. And that's pretty much it. For now, he's a long-haired, androgynous boy. He shows up in town in Holme, Minnesota, in 1997, and, you know, begins the search for his mom there. He, you know, in town, he runs into a number of people, makes some friends and some enemies, and you know, that's the story.
This story is a long time coming. I read that you pieced this together based on some work you had done as early as 2006?
That's right. The earliest piece that still exists inside the book was written in 2006, while I was in my MFA program, and I, you know, was kicking around these ideas, these characters, and this landscape for a long time through all of grad school, and even before grad school, actually. I wrote a lot of notes before that. None of that stuff actually made it into the book, but this landscape has been in my writing for a long time. And so, yeah, then I graduated from grad school, and, you know, life got in the way. I needed a couple jobs to pay the bills, and eventually started writing again. Picked it back up in 2014, and now it's coming out now, 5 years after that. So, yeah, it's been a long time coming, for sure.
Northern Lights is set in the 90s. There's teen drug use, there's nationalism, there are struggles with sexual identity. This story seems highly relevant to issues today.
The 90s in the parts of Minnesota that I was living in at the time was suffering through the meth epidemic of that era, which I believe is still going on in a sort of different form now that opioids have really sort of taken over. And so that was part of it. Another scene, the Confederate flag revival that takes place around the middle of the book, actually happened in Cambridge, Minnesota in 1997 while I was in high school, when some of my classmates put all of that together. So I watched all of that happen, and that has always been tossing around in my mind as a key part of the setting of that part of Minnesota for some reason, though can't claim that I really understand it. In the end, it's more a part of a setting.
So one of the things that I noticed is when we have novels written about today, you know, you can't leave cell phones out of it. You can't leave technology out of it. So I think that makes it a very different story, that you're set in the 90s, kids aren't on their phones. They're in a small town. And how do you get around? How do you communicate with other kids? I think that made it an interesting story to read in this day and age.
It wasn't really that long ago, but it seems a lot different, right? Like, if you don't know where your friends are and you don't call them before you leave your house, you're just suddenly lost. You may never see them again.
Right.
Back in the 90s, that's sort of how it was. And then, you know, in the 2000s, Facebook and cell phones and all of that stuff connected everyone. And I also have a feeling that that is, you know, these people that I'm writing about in the 90s were disconnected from the rest of the United States. You know, living in rural Minnesota back then meant you're pretty much just stuck there unless you left. Nowadays, we have the internet connecting people everywhere. So some of the people that I was writing about in this book, with their disconnection from society, were connected to society with the internet and were eventually even included in contemporary politics, which is something that a lot of those people had felt abandoned from for a long time. I remember in the 90s hearing the exact same things that I heard people saying during the 2016 election on TV, you know, about how people in those types of towns felt abandoned and everything. That's not news, you know. That's at least 20 years old. It was already looking like this when I lived there 20 years ago, so it may, you know, maybe 40 years. And Holm is definitely a good example of a town like that. It had a railroad, used to be a railroad stop, but then the railroad left and the jobs went with it. There were some factories dependent on that railroad that also disappeared. Eventually the Walmart showed up to destroy what was left of the downtown, which wasn't much to begin with. And, you know, those are very real concerns in, like, very rural areas as the downtowns disappear. And now even Walmarts are leaving, and that really leaves everyone without anything. After Walmart was the only distribution of food and goods, and then suddenly they disappear, leaving just a giant building behind. And these are a lot of problems that I was researching, kicking over in my head, and looking up online as I was writing the book, also relying heavily on memory, of course.
That's writer Raymond Strom. He's talking about his debut novel, Northern Lights. So, Raymond, let's talk more about the Minnesota experience. You grew up in Hibbing, Minnesota, I see. What was that experience like for you?
Yeah, it's a little more complicated than that. I guess I was born in Hibbing, and then we moved a lot. I lived in 10 different towns before I went to high school in Cambridge, Minnesota. I've been to small towns like this in Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, Montana, Wisconsin, before we moved back to Minnesota, and that's where I ended up going to high school and to college. And we moved around a lot. Another thing about this book is that Shane sort of finds friends that he hadn't had before, and that was sort of a real thing for me, too. Like, everywhere I went, I would make friends briefly, and then we would move away. Like, transient childhood friendships is another big theme that I was looking for, just because I had so many of them myself. By the time I did get to high school, I mean, it did turn a lot like the beginning of the book. Shane and I share an appearance, at least our appearance. When I was 17, I looked pretty much how I described Shane in the book, and a lot of that stuff, appearance-based violence that he dealt with, was just stuff that I'm recalling from my childhood. So in a way, a lot of that stuff is pretty real. Although, you know, I mean, I did live in a number of towns where, you know, none of that stuff happened, and I had good friends for the short time I was there. So it was kind of an up-and-down thing, I guess, my childhood in the Midwest.
What's next for you?
There were a number of characters that just disappear in Northern Lights, as happens when kids are teenagers, and so the next one I'm working on is one of those characters resurfaces in New York 10 years later in 2005. And in that passing time, he has, graduated from college by going through jail and drug treatment, and now is trying to start a life of his own. He gets to New York and gets involved with a woman who asks him for a huge favor that's possibly more than he can give. That's what I'm working on so far.
Sounds good. Raymond Strom is the author of Northern Lights, a powerful and haunting coming-of-age story, and it's his debut novel, available now through Simon & Schuster. The KAXE KBXE Book Club has just finalized the book list for the next several months, and it is an amazing list. Starting with April, we'll be reading Eleanor Oliphant is Completely Fine by Gail Honeyman. In May, we'll be reading The Lost Girls of Paris by Pam Genoff, who we just heard from earlier in the show. We'll be reading Turn Right at Machu Picchu by Mark Adams in June. In July, Virgil Wander by Leif Anger. Black Leopard, Red Wolf by Marlon James will be our book for August. And in September, Educated by Tara Westover. You can find the dates for our Bemidji and Grand Rapids meetings at kaxe.org or on our What We're Reading page on Facebook. The KAXE KBXE Book Club is a co-ed group open to the public. Bring a friend, bring a beverage or snack to share, and join us. Up next, Fiona Barton. Fiona Barton is the author of best-selling books The Widow, as well as The Child, and her intrepid character, journalist Kate Waters, returns in book 3 of the Kate Waters series. This one is called The Suspect. When two 18-year-old girls go missing in Thailand, their families are thrust into the international spotlight, desperate to find them. Journalist Kate Waters is on the story, even as she worries about her own son who went abroad after failing out of university, and has rarely been in touch. But as the girls' disappearance take a tragic turn, Kate and her family find themselves inextricably involved, and the tables are turned on Kate as reporter becomes the reported. The Suspect is a finely crafted and suspenseful thriller, and here to tell us more about it is author Fiona Barton. Fiona, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
This is your third book featuring the intrepid journalist Kate Waters. Tell us about her.
Yes, good old Kate. When I started writing The Widow, my first book, she was supposed to be a very minor character, just letting the widow tell her story, much as I did when I was a reporter. But gradually she grew, and like the good reporter she is, she got in the door and has refused to leave. So, yes, she's still here. This time, in The Suspect, the tables are turned on Kate. She's covering the story of two missing girls. They've gone on a gap year to Thailand and go missing. And so Kate starts to cover the story, and she goes out to Bangkok when bodies are found. And she's hoping that she can reconnect with her son, Jake, who 2 years previously had dropped out of university and gone off to find himself in Southeast Asia. But when she gets there, she finds that she's no longer the reporter. She has become the story, and so it goes on.
Now, we don't really have a gap year here in the States. Can you give us an idea of, first of all, what the gap year is, and do these kinds of disappearances actually happen frequently in real life?
Sure. Yeah, gap year, I think it is quite a European thing. It's teenagers finish school, high school, that would be for you, at 18. And if they have a place at university, they would start that autumn. So there's only a couple of months between school and university. And a lot of teenagers take a year off. So they take a year out so that they start university a year after. And they go traveling. Often they get jobs teaching English, or they work with charities, or it's quite a structured thing often. It isn't just, you know, going on holiday. But my two girls, Alex and Rosie, have saved up, and they're going to do some traveling and then perhaps get some bar work. But they wanted to take a year out, get a bit of life experience, and, you know, some some degree courses, they suggest that you do and that you go and sort of do work experience as well. So that's what they've done. Off they went.
A good deal of the story takes place in Thailand, and I read that you traveled there to do some research for the book. How was that experience?
Oh! I'm not going to be booking a holiday there anytime soon. No, I went for 4 days, and because that's all I could manage, because I was busy writing. I think I was longer on the aeroplane than on the ground, but never mind. And I immersed myself in Khao San Road and the area where backpackers congregate. There's lots of travel shops there and very cheap bars and very, very cheap hostels. So I went and I found my hostel, Bates Motel, as it's known in the book. And I almost stayed in it, but I stood in the room and I've described it absolutely as it was in the book. I thought, no, I don't think so. It was about $3 a night, and they were overcharging. So, yes, I did. And I sat at the cafes and listened to conversations and watched people. And it was brilliant for giving me a sense of what was happening without actually being part of it, if you know what I mean. I was there as an observer, sort of drinking in all the details rather than the Red Bull and vodka.
This is What We're Reading. I'm Tammy Bobrowski, and I'm talking with author Fiona Barton. Her new book is called The Suspect. Fiona, you turned the tables on Kate, as you mentioned. You made the reporter become the reported. And in your story, we get an insider's view of the journalism profession. You mentioned that you had been a journalist as well. You depict the media in your story, both in good and bad ways, I thought. You show how a journalist can help with a criminal case, but you also show how competitive and deceitful some journalists can be to get the scoop. How close is this to what you experienced on the job?
I've written it very much out of my experience. So I wanted to give a clear-eyed vision of what it is to be a reporter. I was one, as I say, 30 years. I was a news editor as well, and I'm very proud to have been a reporter. I must say that at the beginning. I'm not bashing the media. I loved my job, and I think the profession does a fantastic work. But I wanted to get away from the stereotypes, to be honest. The stereotypes of the media are that all journalists are criminals and weasels, and it's just not true. You know, we're human beings with shades of light and dark, like any other human being. So I wanted to make journalists human for a start, and that meant being truthful. So not making them out to be paragons of virtue or, you know, just one-note characters. I wanted to give them more roundedness, really. So, yes, I've taken the good and the bad, which, you know, like in any profession, there will be that. That's what human nature is, I'm afraid.
Now, you just mentioned that you were a journalist and a news editor for over 30 years at the Daily Mail and the Daily Telegraph. How was that transition to fiction writing?
Very difficult. It was. It was a real grinding of gears because for all that time, I had learned to write short, sharp, to the point. Every word must count. I'm not saying that's a bad thing in fiction, but it's slightly more exaggerated in journalism. And also, you tell the story in the first paragraph. Well, that's not too good for a thriller.
Right.
So I had to unlearn that. And I had to invent. And I know people say airily that, you know, the journalists make it all up. It's rubbish. Of course we don't, you know, and there's no need to. There's nothing stranger than fact, I can tell you. But it was quite hard for me to let go of the idea that I was, that everything was based in fact and that I was reporting truthfully what somebody had said to me. Do you know what I mean? After all that time. So I had to work on that and I had to give myself permission to invent. But I think I have I've stuck with sort of raiding my archive of characters who I've spoken to, interviewed, met, read about as a reporter. So I do still ground things in a version of the truth anyway. I do cherry pick a bit.
So what's next for you? Will there be a book four in the Kate Waters series?
There will be a book four. I'm writing it at the moment. But this time I'm doing it without Kate, which felt absolutely right. It was what I planned when I was writing book three, that I would do one without Kate, still psychological thriller, but I wanted to try some different characters and not to say I don't miss her. She's occasionally whispering in my ear, but yeah, she's having a rest. She's lying down in a darkened room for a bit.
I have to say I really enjoyed this book. It kept me guessing right up to the end. Very suspenseful, and I probably exclaimed out loud a few times reading it.
Did you?
Yes.
Lovely. Well, I'm thrilled to hear that.
Great. The book is called The Suspect. It's book three in the Kate Waters series. Fiona Barton, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you very much for having me on air.
You might be familiar with the famous organizing consultant who has recently inspired people to tidy up cluttered homes by getting rid of things that do not spark joy. I think about this whenever I look at my to-read list. It's currently clocking in at 171 books, with no end in sight. Will I ever get around to reading all these books? Maybe I should go through this list and clean it up. But how do I declutter a list full of books holding so much promise, so much potential, full of escape into new worlds, full of stories, full of wisdom and humor and love? The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks is on this list. That's right, I still haven't read that yet, but I want to. Gone with the Wind and a bunch of other classics, those are on the list too. Also on the list, The Golem and the Genie by Helene Wecker. And guess what? Book two is coming out soon. Now I'm at 172 books and growing with no end in sight. But you know what? That does spark joy. Let us know what books spark joy for you. Check out our What We're Reading page on Facebook, where you can also find a list of the books mentioned in today's show, or email us at comments@kaxe.org. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Tammy Bobrowski. What We're Reading is made possible in part by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota.